Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, November 15th, 2009. I'm Sam Minter, and with me I've got Yvonne Bogan. And yes, indeed, we are once again doing this on a Sunday, because Yvonne has to juggle his schedule around yet again. But, you know, hey, it happens. So the first thing on our agenda was your good friend and mine, Lou Dobbs.
Buddy.
So Lou Dobbs, for just the quick update for anybody who doesn't know who he is, has been on CNN since like the beginning of CNN.
Except for a 2-year hiatus when he decided to
I was gonna join. Yeah.
Space.com.
Yeah, he left for some .com, space.com, because he was going to, you know, ride the .com bubble or whatever. Of course, that didn't work out, and he came back. But otherwise, he's been at CNN since the beginning. And for the most of that time period, he was a straight-up business journalist. You know, it had their business show and, you know, did financial news and that kind of stuff.
It was a show called Moneyline the time, which is a pretty good show. I used to watch, you know, when there wasn't, especially when I was in Puerto Rico, where, I mean, we didn't even have financial news network started sometime in the 80s, but couldn't get that. I mean, the best source for business news every day that most people watch was Moneyline.
So, in any case, after... well, he says the transition basically was after 9/11. He started doing more and more opinion stuff in addition to straight news. And basically, he was one of these folks who is not necessarily the easiest to classify, because during the Bush administration, he did do a lot of stuff that was ranting against the Bush administration. And more more recently, he's been ranting against the Obama administration. But basically, he's, you know, his big thing for a big part of that time was immigration.
Anti-immigration.
Immigration was his big issue. Anti-illegal immigration, anti-immigration, basically talking about how we should be, enforcing the borders better, and
he claimed that Hispanics brought like 7,000 new cases of leprosy to the U.S. He was against, I don't know, what else did he say? He talked about the outsourcing of America, how all these people were coming in and they were causing crimes and taking jobs.
The outsourcing of America part was also about just shipping jobs overseas, various places, which is different. Than immigration, basically he was a very loud voice in the immigration argument, and more recently he sort of got involved with the birthers and was sort of pushing the "have we really seen the birth certificate" line, and this is sort of the thing that sort of pushed CNN to the edge, I guess, a little bit, because they put their own reporters on it, verified, hey, there's no issue here. There's a birth certificate. It's legitimate. Obama.
And even better, they took one day that he was off.
Yes.
And put an anchor on his show, absolutely, totally refuting Lou Dobbs's allegations.
Yes. And then basically he came back and started doing the same thing.
Same thing again.
And apparently at some point the management at CNN basically told him, "Hey, look, you can do your opinion stuff on your little radio show, which isn't affiliated with CNN, but we want you to do a straight news show on CNN. That's what we need you to do." And apparently he at some point, and it's a little bit unclear whether in the end he jumped or was pushed, but that ultimatum he decided was not one that he could live with. He did not want to do a straight news show. He wants to do opinion. So earlier this or last week, I should say, he came onto his show and said, "Today will be my final episode," and he's gone.
I say good riddance. I don't know. But his ratings were not going that well. I don't know if you noticed that his ratings had been collapsing.
I had
over
not.
The last few months. Yeah, there was talk about that because his ratings at he was getting his ass kicked on his hour by multiple hosts. So I I don't know. I guess that his show, I guess he wasn't getting as many people to like to listen to his stuff. Somebody made a funny comment about him. It said a Washington Post TV critic went to remark that this explains their upcoming documentary, "The World Flat. We Report, You Decide."
there's speculation on where he's going to go next, because he sort of says, he wants to go somewhere where he can influence the public debate more, et cetera, et cetera. So there's some people saying, well, is he going to end up on Fox next week, or is he going to go off doing his own thing? Or is he going to start running for office? Because even last time around, there was some speculation that he'd run as a third party candidate for president in 2008. He obviously did not. But maybe he's going to do that next time around, or maybe he's just going to concentrate on his radio show and work on becoming the next Rush Limbaugh. I mean, who knows?
Oh, who knows? I don't know. It's a little bit difficult to peg anyway. What I mean, other than him being a rabid anti-immigrant. Look at some of these positions. He is pro-choice, opposes gun control. He calls himself a fiscal conservative. He once called himself a lifelong Republican, and I'm like, okay, pro-choice, opposes gun control, is a lifelong Republican. I'm like, this guy's like all over the place, man. I mean, I'm like, I don't know what the hell. I don't know. He was against gay marriage. Who knows? I don't know.
I mean,
all over the place.
I mean, roughly the place he could fit into, is sort of,
Wacko?
Well, you know who he matches on a lot of stuff, actually.
Who?
Perot.
Ah, well, there you go. Well, that makes sense. Wackos of America, unite!
Perot had the same... it wasn't a big part of his thing, but I think he had the same kind of orientation on immigration, but it wasn't his emphasis. He had the same sort of financial things. I don't know. It's interesting whenever you see one of these people that doesn't fit neatly into the molds of where the two parties are right now. Now I think it's also a part of how the parties move around, because 10 years ago he may have fit very neatly into a Republican fold. I mean, they weren't, or maybe 20 years ago. They were more big tentish and they weren't doing the big ideological purge that they're in the process of doing now, it's always interesting when you have some of these people who, don't fit. And so they're agreeing with the Democrats on some things, they're agreeing with the Republicans on some things, but for the most part, they're saying both of them are idiots. And I'm attracted somewhat to those people. Now, I think Lou Dobbs is an idiot. I think Lou Dobbs an idiot. However, in many, many, many issues, I think if you really look at it, the answer is both of the parties are doing things that aren't actually the right best solution.
I agree with that. I will tell you that the one thing that I disliked about Lou Dobbs, I must admit, was this crazy rabid anti-immigrant streak in which he, accused and ascribed all these crazy things to immigrants that just were simply not true, simply because he hates them for some reason. I don't know. I guess, his parents must have been, Native Americans or something. I don't know.
He certainly looks it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, all I have to say to that, Yvonne, is, you and your immigrant friends and all your diseases and stuff you're bringing to this country, go back to wherever you came from.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll try to we'll start booking flights tomorrow.
And meanwhile, I'll try to figure out which of the 20 European countries I have ancestors in, and I'll go back to one of them.
You'll go back to one of them too? Okay, well, yeah. All right, there you go.
Anyway.
We'll try to figure out what to go back to, okay.
Okay, that's
enough. So I guess I'll have to go back to one of those because, you know, I don't know. I'll have to go back to either France or Spain if I really go back because, I don't know, go back to Puerto Rico, I'm still in the U.S. anyway.
I know, yeah, damn you.
I'm going to have to go back to France or something. I don't know.
Or you could solve that by going back to Puerto Rico and leading the secessionist movement.
I could do that too. Yeah. I could do that too.
And then once you've borne arms against the United States, then, you know, we can properly shoot you in the head.
Yes, that's a great idea. Okay, sounds like a plan. Okay, great.
Okay, enough for this segment. We will be back momentarily. Oh, yeah, I was joking in case anybody. Yeah, anyway.
No shooting. No, I'm not taking up arms. I don't like guns. Okay, so.
Okay, we'll be back after this break.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready.
Frankenstein, then let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And I hate to interrupt Yvonne singing, but we are back.
We're back.
So let's see what else I got here. I don't know that we can do a whole segment on this, but I wanted to mention one thing that came out in the last couple of days, which is, you know, somebody looked at the congressional record on various things going on with the healthcare debate, and then they found out that there was I don't know how remarkable it really is, but a quote-unquote remarkable amount of passages in the items left in the record by various different congresspeople, actually of both parties, that matched word for word for word.
Yeah.
And now this is not, by the way, in the part that necessarily in the part that the congresspeople go to the floor and speak. You know, they always say they can revise and extend their remarks, and then they add all kinds of crap into the
right.
You know, so basically,
they're plagiarizing all of themselves.
No, they are including language that was written by lobbyists for Genentech. Which is a big pharmaceutical firm, I believe.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
So, you know, and apparently, you know, the lobbyists from Genentech actually, you know, they weren't apparently hiding too much about this. They were actually proud of it. They'd written one version for Democrats and one version for Republicans and were trying to get it into the record as many times as they could. And so apparently, you know, this, and I haven't read the actual blurb what it is, but, you know, it's basically Genentech's view on the healthcare debate. Quoted verbatim over and over and over again by various different congresspeople in the congressional record in different areas in both parties, you know, with slightly different versions for Republicans and Democrats.
Isn't that something? Well, I got to tell you that I got to give my hats off to Genentech's lobbyists. Pretty damn good.
Apparently they're effective. But I mean, you know, this just. Every time I see something like this, and I mean, I know to expect it. I know that this is how it works, and I shouldn't be surprised or upset or whatever. But, you know, come on. I mean, this is the kind of thing that is sort of the fundamental level of why, you know, Congress just is not working the way it should. I mean, you know, what should be happening here is that the Congress people should be, you know, having their own opinions and perhaps putting that into the congressional record as their speeches and statements, you know, not, you know, quoting various factoids that are given to them by various lobbyists. I mean, okay, let's even accept that their staff is going to write some of this crap. Fine. But they shouldn't be just taking stuff straight out of the mouths of industry lobbyists and doing and placing it in their statements. Now, of course, I know this is just placing in their statements is one of the non, you know, things that doesn't really matter. The reality of the fact is that this is also how a lot of legislation is written. You know, where the industries yes. affected by the legislation actually write draft language that in many cases is just adopted. I mean, because, you know, the legislatures will say, oh, okay, thank you for doing this work for us. And boom, they'll pick it up and they'll include it in what they put out there. And then, of course, it goes through the messy legislative process. But in many cases, you know, that's what comes out the other end, too, you know, is stuff that's essentially written by the industries being being affected by the legislation. And, you know, the term industry capture is used for the executive branch agencies, where, you know, basically you have, you know, people who were big in a particular industry end up in the executive branch that regulates it. But the same kind of thing, it definitely applies to the legislative branch as well, you know, and you have all of this stuff there. And I don't know, it just frustrates me because it seems like there's such a clear, you know, conflict of interest the right word? I don't know. There's an effect there that, you know, is not a desirable one in the system, let's say. And I don't know the right solution to it. I don't want to, you know, specifically go around muzzling our Congress critters and telling them what they can and can't say or what they can and can't put in legislation. But I think it indicates a fundamental problem in our system when, you know, you've got, you know, lobbyists having that level of direct influence on what goes on in the debate.
I think that one of the things, it's something about access, right? I mean, the lobbyists are guys that have built these relationships over the years with staffers and all these guys that companies wind up paying for their access in order to get their points across. The problem is how do you balance that access? I mean, I don't have a problem with the
notion of lobbying. I mean,
of
course, you want your legislative people and your executive people, for that matter, to get, you know, to have access to the points of views of all the different groups who might be impacted by something.
But how do you have rules that make lobbying, say, out in the open? How do you have rules that you know how these relationships are? How do you have rules that make it fair, you know, make it balanced, the access that lobbyists have versus the individuals, you know, needing to push their points across on some type of legislation? And I just don't think that we have the proper balance in that right now. That's where I see the problem. So I don't know. What are the solutions? I don't know. I'm thinking about that, but I'm not sure what they could be. I don't know. Have laws that force only interaction in public, that it has to be that if a lobbyist comes up and they're talking about a bill, it needs to be in a public forum at the same time as other constituents have a public forum. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, you know, you could solve it by requiring that all people in Congress have a 24/7 live video stream of what they're doing.
That would be something. But you know, there's a lot of stuff there I don't really want to see.
You change the channel when they're going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
what about when they're getting laid? I mean, I don't know. They're going to have sex, have a live. I mean, this is going to turn into a porn channel.
I was going to say, you know, well, it depends on the congressperson, I guess. I mean, I guess there'd be a market for that. They could replace their regular fundraising with some good pay-per-view. But, I mean,
There you go.
I don't know. I mean, Orrin Hatch? I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, imagine if Orrin Hatch is having sex. Do you really want to see this on live video?
It would have an effect. It would have an effect on the type of sex scandals you get, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but I guess.
They might behave a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what the real solution is. That's what I was just saying was obviously tongue-in-cheek. But but it seems like there's clearly something broken going on, and has been for some time, and is just getting worse. And every time they try to reform it by, you know, restricting this or restricting that, I think that's it ends up being counterproductive, because you just add layers and layers and layers of bureaucracy and rules that, you know, people can end up violating by mistake without even intending to do something wrong because they're so complex. At the same time, you know, the people who want influence are going to, you know, very quickly read the laws, figure out the way around it, and keep going in a different way. You know, so I'm not sure that, you know, more and more layers of that kind of stuff really is helpful here. But at the same time, you look at it and you look at the Congress people who did this and you're like, really? You cut and pasted from something one of these guys sent you? Really? Now, of course, they didn't. Their staff did. But, you know, it's still, they're fundamentally in the end responsible for what goes out there. You know, and in terms of things like the congressional record, I think that's a bunch of hooey anyway. I think you should have the exact transcript of what actually happened and then leave it there. And, you know, and obviously there are ways to get the exact transcript, but the modified record that has all this other crap in it, I mean, it seems rather pointless. Very few people read it anyway. And it's just, I don't know, it's just all, you know, Every time you look into the details of government, you know, it's one of those things where they, you know, the analogy is always, it's like you don't want to see hot dogs being made because you'll never want to eat them again. It's the same thing with anything in the government, legislative or executive, probably even judicial. It's just a freaking mess when you look into the details and you start looking at it and you say, this can't possibly be the way it works. This is crap. But it is the way it works. And so, oh well. Anyway, I think that's all we have to say. We actually did manage to fill a whole segment with that, so let's take a break.
Take a break.
And we'll be back with something else. So during the break, Yvonne mentioned that I still seem to have a cold. Yes, I do. Yeah, I mentioned in last week's show I was getting sick. So I've had this, you know, for over a week now. Yeah, where it's been up and down. Like I didn't go to work Monday because I wasn't feeling great, and I Tuesday morning I was feeling a little better, but I went into the doctor because I'd already made the appointment. And because, you know, normally I wouldn't go to the doctor for something like, you know, coldish, but, you know, Brandy was like, hey, there's a baby in the house. You just make sure we're doing the right thing. So I went in and they're like, yeah, you're right. You're probably doing all the right stuff. It's a cold. It's not a flu. And you were actually probably most contagious on Friday, where I actually had gone to work. And you're probably not contagious anymore, but I'd stay home another day or two at least. So I stayed home. I did some light work from home. Not, you know, I wasn't really super productive, but I did a little bit of working from home. Then I went back in, and then I went back into work, and then Brandy got sick. And then so I had to come home anyway to help out at home because she was sick. And then it started getting worse again on Friday. And yeah, so it's been up and down and round and round, but it's like, it's just sort of hanging on, and it's, you know, ick, whatever. You know, I hate being sick.
No, well.
It happens, you know. Brandy's particularly pissed because she says this is the worst, like, cold kind of thing she's had in about 15 years. So she's like, you know, I hate this. Anyway, so aside from sickness, it was not swine flu. You know, I did get my my swine flu shot. When I went into the doctor, they're like, "Oh yeah, you should have one." And they went boop, and there I was done. So you know, I'm now fully anti-piggied or whatever.
Okay.
I haven't had the regular flu shot.
Is it anti Miss Piggy or just?
I if it keeps her away, I think that's fine.
Okay. All right.
You know, because I was never a big Miss Piggy fan.
Neither was I.
You know, I like the Muppets in general, but I was not a fan of Miss Piggy. You know, when she came on the screen, it's like, you know, okay. Crazy. You know.
Can we move on, please? Yes.
No more Miss Piggy. Okay. You know, although I was recently rewatching the, because of the Sesame Street anniversary, I was rewatching the thing where Big Bird sang at Jim Henson's funeral. That was kind of sad. Mm.
I did not know it was Sesame Street's anniversary.
This last week was the 40th anniversary of the first broadcast of Sesame Street.
Oh fuck! Do you see how disconnected I've been? I have no clue.
So you know, people. There was a lot about. I guess it was maybe it was last week, but anyway, you know, Google had like Sesame Street characters on its homepage for a full week. You know, and there was a lot of clips and stuff of old Sesame Street stuff floating around. Since I started, I'll talk about this for a couple minutes. You know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, the initial goals of Sesame Street, the ages they were, and basically this has been a highly successful thing where, and not just in terms of, hey, it's a show that's lasted 40 years, but they've had spent a lot of time on the educational aspect of it, of measuring the effect it had, the particular target that Sesame Street always had was, basic school skills for disadvantaged populations and neighborhoods, specifically urban ones, where they had found prior to Sesame Street's launching that there were a lot of kids growing up in these neighborhoods who, when they started first grade, were not at the point where generally first grade expected people already to be. And so this was trying to fill that gap with those little kids before first grade who, for whatever reason, were not getting this kind of stuff at home. And they've measured on all kinds of metrics, doing all kinds of, you know, tests and things like that, that it actually has had, you know, had a significant effect for those who watched it. And it's been highly successful as a result. It's expanded in various areas. You know, it's internationally, there are versions of it all over the world at this point. I certainly remember watching it when I was a kid, you know.
I learned English with this fucking show. I loved it. Are you kidding me? I watched it every day. If it wasn't for, I mean, that's how I learned.
Yeah. So. And, you know, it's obviously a somewhat different show now than it was 40 years ago. The key elements, I guess, are the same. I anticipate in a year or two, I'm going to be watching it again. So we'll see how, we'll see how it's changed. Anyway, so that was longish. So let's do another shortish. I mean, that was shortish. So anyway, whatever. Snow globes. I want to talk real quick about snow globes because it's like a half segment thing. The TSA, in their ultimate wisdom, has now determined that amongst the things that you cannot take on planes are now snow globes. And here's the official reason why. In most snow globes, there is nothing on it that tells you exactly how much liquid is inside the snow globe. So it might be more than the 3.5 ounces or whatever you're allowed to have.
Okay. So that's why. Okay.
Yes. It's not because you can hit somebody with it, which you can. If it's a nice crystal snow globe, it could be a serious weapon. Of course, they're cheap plastic ones, too. It's not because of any of that kind of stuff. And it's not because there's been any necessary threat or danger associated with them, what we know. It's that there might be more than 3 ounces of liquid inside. And
the snow globe bomber.
And they can't tell. Now, of course, if they really, really cared, there are ways that you could tell. There are tools that you could use to measure that. Of course, that would be like just adding
rocket science,
even more insanity to the. I mean, basically, you can do mass and volume things like with a little dunk tank that you can stick things in. But are you going to do that at the line? This is just another example, and I mean, there have been so many that. The security theater, as they call it here, is just ridiculous because there's so much that is being done here that has absolutely zero actual effect on security other than making people feel like, oh, look, they're doing something.
Listen, I went and I just recently switched bags and I carried a bag that I normally don't carry. And I didn't realize that I had all these gels and liquids in the bag in another place outside of a plastic bag. But I just passed it right through the damn thing. Nobody said a fucking thing. I noticed that when I got there, I'm like, oh, look at this. Shit. I didn't realize I had put this in here.
And then you're like, wow, look, a handgun.
Well, no. I think that would have been a little bit more obvious.
Yes, well, you know, there are cases all the time of people who have gotten to their destination and then realized that, oops, they had things that weren't allowed. I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, A, they're not effective at screening for the things that they say they're supposed to be screening for, you know, because every time somebody does, like, a test where they go in and, you know, send, like, 50 people through trying to go through with, you know, some piece of banned something or other. Uh-huh. 40 out of the 50 get through or some insane high number. You know, and I don't have a specific reference. I'm just, you know.
We're making up that number because I don't think it was 40 out of 50. I think it was lower than that, but still it was a significant number.
The bottom line is they do tests on a fairly routine basis. Things get through all the time. So, A, they're not doing what they're actually doing effectively. So, this is one of those things where, you know, if you don't do it 100%, it's kind of meaningless. You know, you might as well not do it at all because the attack against it is to just send multiple people and then one of them will get through. And two, the things they're screening for are stupid and are not the right things to be screening for anyway. And if you really want to... Yeah, I'm quoting a bit from I think his name is Bruce Schreiner. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, something with an S. He has a security blog and he talks about this stuff all the time. But basically the bottom line is the things that would really increase security are largely invisible. They are, you know, increasing foreign intelligence, making sure that we have, you know, more people in our intelligence agencies who can actually speak the relevant languages and know about the relevant cultures, things like that. Stopping people in airport lines to check their shoes is not going to have any sort of significant security effect. Let alone banning snow globes. It's just ridiculous, and it wastes people's time, it wastes people's money. The reality is you could probably go back to how airports were in the 1970s and not have any significant change in the number of actual incidents that happened on airlines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so another waste. Okay, we're past our time, so let's take another break, and we will be back shortly with yet again something else.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
Stuttering by Tony Mankus. A rudimentary bridge in the mouth, the way a hand never does. Enough. What is sufficient? I lick everything I can touch, because I'm young and things are beautiful. I am not a universe or sparrow, lost on the wind, always, always, always expanding. Heat in the water, heat between us, a stuttering bridge beneath which sediment takes a long time, getting where it wants to go.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday. Okay, got a couple things here. I'll once again let you pick, Yvonne. Palin's got a book coming out. Palin, whatever. The App Store for iPhones has been running into more controversy about some of their policies. There's how filibusters work in Congress. There's just talking about things that are obsolete that aren't around anymore to make us feel old some more.
Let's talk about my buddy. Obsolete. Let's talk about the obsolete stuff.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you feel obsolete and want to feel more obsolete.
Oh, what the hell? You know. I love all this old obsolete stuff.
Basically, this is just prompted by I saw a single blog post somewhere, and I know I don't know where the hell it was. I'm sorry. But it was somebody basically pumping a new book that's coming out that is called Obsolete. But it's basically about stuff that was once common that is now almost entirely gone, you know?
Okay.
And I'll try to find this blog post for a second. Obsolete. Okay, I have to spell it right.
Helps.
But let's see. Okay, so this was posted on Kotke, but I saw it from the Daily Dish on November 14th. Anyway, the new book coming out is called Obsolete. And some of the examples here, things that used to be common but aren't anymore. Blind dates, mixtapes, getting lost, porn magazines, looking old, operators, camera film, hitchhiking, body hair, writing letters,
body hair?
Basketball players in short shorts, privacy, cash, and books. Now, I think this isn't necessarily the best list in the world.
That
I think
isn't
we
the
can
best
come up
list
with
because I got to, yeah, we could do a hell of a lot better than
because,
that.
Because, God damn it, you still have lots of body hair.
Last time I checked.
No,
I'm looking at it right now.
I don't want that visual. This is just.
You've seen it before. I mean, what the hell?
No, this
I don't shave my legs.
You know, you're just behind the times then.
Okay.
And this is a topic we've had a couple of times previously on the show where we've talked about, you know, look at the things that were common things in life.
I'll tell you one that I used to carry a lot that I don't carry anymore. It was a paper day planner, for example.
Yeah, yep. You still see those in stores, but I mean, you got to think the sales of those things is through the floor.
Right. I mean, how many people do I see that carry around a paper day planner? I mean, that has plummeted, the number of people that do that. Loose leaf binders?
Yeah. Jeez.
When is the last time you saw loose leaf paper?
Oh, recently. I have a kid in school.
But they still use it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes. Interesting.
Come on, like phone booths, you know?
Phone? You know, the other day I actually saw for the first time in a long, long time some people actually try to use a payphone.
Right.
Okay?
Was it comical?
I mean, because you walk through an airport. You know, it used to be that you would walk through an airport and all the payphones would be full. You know, you've seen people making calls. There are still some payphones at the airport, but you never see anybody using those damn things anymore.
Right. Well, I saw something a month or two ago at this point that in Manhattan, there are now four actual old-fashioned, fully enclosed phone booths, the kind you actually step inside and close the door. There are four.
Right.
Left in Manhattan.
Wow. And I mean, if you remember, Manhattan used to be absolutely blanketed by these.
You know, and now there's like almost nowhere for Superman to change.
Yep. That's right. You know, so Superman's going to have to go, you know, do it in the bathroom or something. I don't know.
but, you know,
I mean, they certainly, they mentioned hitchhiking. I think that one is even a little bit before our time for the most part. I mean, hitchhiking once upon a time was an actual way that lots of people used to get from place to place. Now, like, you know, I can't remember the last time I've even seen someone trying to hitchhike. And, you know, nobody's going to pick them up anyway, because, you know, it's like, it's...
I got to be suicidal.
Right. I mean, you know, and I mean, of all things, like, could I see myself, like, under what circumstance could I ever see myself thinking about, hey, you know, I want to go somewhere. Let me go stand out on a corner and put my thumb out. No, it's not going to happen. You know? Mm-hmm. And this is something, you know, anyway, let's see what else. You know, of course, you got the good old technological moving on, like rotary phones and stuff, or I don't remember.
I don't remember the last time I ever used. I saw an available to use rotary phone. I must have been. I still remember, like, the last time I went, where the heck was it? It must have been in Buenos Aires, like a few years ago, that I walked into a telegraph office.
Oh. Like, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. A telegraph office. I was like, Jesus Christ, these still exist? I was like, in some place, well, in Argentina, they still used to a few years ago. I'm talking the 21st century. I walked into one. That was shocking, to say the least.
I mean, because it wasn't that long ago. I mean, maybe in our it was longer than 20 or 30 years ago, but it used to be very, very common. If you had an important event, you would send a telegram.
Send a telegram.
Because, right. you know, the baby's been born, somebody died, you know, whatever, right. Something important's happening. Telegram was the mode of operation because long-distance calls were expensive.
Yes.
You know?
And so you send a telegram.
And now, I mean, even that is an example of something, you know, a quote-unquote long-distance call. You know, when's the last time you thought about a phone call you were making, whether or not it was long-distance, because that affected something, you know?
Right. Like, that had some effect. Right.
And I can actually remember, you know, when I was a kid, this mattered. You know, there were local calls and there were long-distance calls.
Well, shit,
calls.
You're talking about 10 years ago it mattered, for Pete's sake. I mean, you know, just 10 years ago. And now that's just completely just... Go on. Irrelevant.
Yeah, and I think, you know, another example that's going to be there, it's not there yet, but give it another 10 years, landlines are going to be in the same category. You know,
I'll tell you that I say that the answer to that is no. And there is, and I was trying to think of why there is a reduction in how many landlines there is. And that I have no doubt. However, I will tell you this, that the reason why landlines aren't completely away is because a landline has it now the use changes. Because you see, a landline, for example, say you have a house that has a security that you have a security gate and they want to call into the house. Not a person, the house.
No.
You need a landline to do
wait,
that.
Let me make a distinction here. There are two things. A, I'm talking about landline for personal use, so I'm not counting landlines in businesses, or even the landlines you're talking about. But even the things you're talking about, where that's going to be over the internet. I mean, you're going to have a wired internet connection. Like,
oh, but I got a voice over IP. I got voice over IP
at
home.
I know.
I'm considering my landline. My voice over IP line. No. Okay.
Here's what I'm considering a landline to be. A dedicated line that goes to a phone that you pick up at home to make calls that is not used for anything else.
Okay, well, I don't have that. I mean, I got a voice over IP phone. So,
well,
okay,
yeah, but at that point, you're not doing a good old plain old telephone service POTS landline.
And that, for the most part, I think will replace just by a data service. I mean, for everybody, period. I don't see how that's not going to happen. I mean, yeah, those will all be gone. Yep.
Yeah,
analog telephony.
And I think, frankly, like, you know, the even the fixed Like, even for VoIP, sort of the fixed location one where you have it plugged in and it's sitting at a desk or something, I think those are going to be much more rare. I mean, there are some business uses perhaps for those, but I think the use of those for personal communications going to go away.
Okay.
Let's see. What else? And this is actually interesting. Instead of talking about things that were around that are obsolete now, let's see if we can think about anything else that is present now, but we think is going to be gone 10 years from now. So I'm going to take a break, and then we'll be right back and think about that for a few minutes before moving on to the next topic. This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you, so this is a break. This is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. 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 Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over. Okay, we're back. So, let me rattle off some of the ones that, lots of people talk about, so maybe aren't as interesting. Old-fashioned non-internet-based television. Distribution of any media on physical media, like DVDs or Blu-ray or whatever. What else? Help out.
I think that, but when you mean like old-fashioned television, what do you mean? You mean that broadcast? You mean that broadcast will go away?
I think that, if we're talking...
Everything will turn on demand?
I think most things will be some sort of on-demand, a la carte thing where you get the shows and broadcasts you want and you don't sign up for, your just package of stuff, or even if you do,
some stuff will still remain live.
No, I'm not saying not live. I mean, even when you buy those, though, you could potentially you want that, you get that, you don't like, but even when you sign up for a package of stuff, because I can definitely see an advantage of signing up for an all you can eat like type program, like rather than buying individual shows on iTunes or on my Apple TV or whatever, I could see the Netflix model where I pay a certain amount per month and I can watch whatever I want, as long as for that flat fee, which is kind of parallel to what the cable operators do now. But I definitely see you're not going to have, a plain old rabbit ears TV that picks stuff up off the air. Your TV is going to be a computer, whether you're looking on a computer used as a multi-purpose device, or whether it's just a smart TV. You are going to have some sort of you're going to be pulling your stuff out of the network, and I think the vast majority of it will be sort of a la carte kind of, I want this show, I want that show, I'm going to subscribe to shows I care about and watch them, at my own time when they become available.
I think that one thing is that before that really takes off, there's still not enough bandwidth for it.
Yeah, but we're talking 10 years out. They'll solve that in 10 years.
10 years out. No, they'll solve that 10 years out. So that'll happen. But actually, what I was going to mention is that right now, even like there's a slew of internet-enabled TVs that are being launched for this holiday season that – apparently are
Netflix
trying to
and other stuff. Yeah.
Yes. So that they will try to bridge that to do what you're mentioning. So that's coming up.
And a lot of the there are a few possibilities for how this is going to work, and this is why like a lot of the cable companies and stuff are scared. Is there ways to do this that involve them, and there are ways to do them that cut them out entirely. So you can have a model where you have a smart box that just picks video from wherever on the internet it wants to get it. And as opposed to the current model where you buy your service from a single provider and they provide you your content as well. And this is one of the big changes that's potentially happening as we go forward is, right now, like if you talk about a Comcast or something like that, traditionally they have been the pipe that provides you, they get to select what channels you have. They get to charge you for channel packages. They get to do all this. If they become only a data transmission layer, and then the actual content comes
from
wherever,
but you see, the one thing is that that's one of the things that a lot of these companies are doing, that they're making sure that they don't become that, because you know they're saying, look, I own this fucking pipe. I ain't just gonna let everybody just
And this is the key to the net neutrality debate.
Right.
You know, with net neutrality regulations, they would be forced to treat all content equally, as opposed to being able to give preference to their own content.
So that's part of, yep. So see if how that goes along. But currently, I mean, these guys have the ability to not let all this not let all this go through unfettered, you know?
That's iffy right now, actually. And for the most part, they haven't been putting those type of restrictions on it. And every time they've tried, they've sort of got slapped and backed off,
But I think for example, Comcast tries to sell a service that broadcasts a lot of bandwidth-intensive television programming through a competitor's pipes, okay? And they're charging $50, and all of a sudden, this other company's, bandwidth is getting all consumed by other information. I guarantee you that block it.
This is already happening. I mean, that's what Hulu does. That's what each of the network sites individually talking.
But those are low bandwidth. That's low quality.
They're increasing them time after time. Look, no, this is exactly
that is low quality, low bandwidth.
It is enough that kind of content is already taking a significant amount of the pipes that go through. I mean, between BitTorrent and streaming video and things like that, you're talking a lot of the bandwidth that's out there right now.
Yeah, but BitTorrent isn't a provider out there selling this stuff.
Well,
okay?
No, it's the same fucking thing. It doesn't matter whether it's legal, it's not, doesn't matter if it's legitimate or not. It is a method that's out there of using stuff. Anyway, but the point is, the point is that they right now have actually, whenever they have tried to put restrictions on, for instance, we're going to slow down Hulu or we're going to slow down BitTorrent or whatever. So far, most of those efforts have been unsuccessful when they have been done targeted in that way. So they've been moving towards things that are more based on bandwidth caps so that individual users can only use so much and then they're done, because those are quote unquote neutral and don't discriminate against,
and then they would have to pay over and above a certain amount of bandwidth. Yes,
right. And I think you may see things going that way. Anyway, I actually didn't want to get distracted by the television one. Can you think of anything? Can you think of anything else that is in use today that you see like 10 years down the line? People are going to be like, "What the hell is that? I haven't used that in years."
Fax machine.
I am so surprised that those still exist today.
Yeah, and a lot of people still use them, amazingly enough.
Yeah, just within the last year, I had something where I had to fax something.
Yeah.
Because that was the way that they wanted to accept something or other. And so I actually ran around, at work, actually, trying to find a working fax machine that I could send this damn thing on. And by the way, it was to somebody else at work. It was weird. It was an HR thing.
What? Okay.
It was even more bizarre. It was to send in the paperwork to put Alex on our healthcare plans and stuff.
So they have an upgrade. Okay.
So the way I was supposed to do that was to fax it to the HR department, which, by the way, was one floor above where I was. But, and I suppose I could have gone upstairs and handed it to them, but because it's HR, they have like a locked door and you have to knock and all this crap, so I just faxed it.
Okay.
So.
And you did manage to fax it. Wow.
I did manage to fax it, although although it took me a while to figure out how to do it properly, because there was like, yeah, do you dial 9? Do you dial 9 and the area code? Do you do... Yeah, eventually I got it. Okay, well, I don't know. I don't have anything else on the top of my mind for that. You got any more until we wrap it up?
Nope.
Okay, so enough about obsolete stuff. There's stuff becoming obsolete all the time. There's new stuff that'll be obsolete. Desktop computers, sometimes people put in that category and saying, you know, hey, laptops can do everything you need. Why do you need a desktop anymore?
I think that obviously I think that the desktops, there will be less desktops around. But I still think that, you know, it's a shift from one to the other. But I don't think it's going to make the desktop totally obsolete. And maybe it'll change, I think, you know, but I don't think it's going to be completely.
I'll tell you my own thoughts on that. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm thinking sometime early next year, I will get finally a replacement computer for the iMac I bought several years ago. And, you know, there are a lot of things where I wish it was a laptop that I had. But, you know, I have a laptop for work. So if I really need a laptop, I can use that. And, you know, with the new iMac, you have a really huge, gorgeous screen.
Screen, I know.
You have a lot more speed, a lot more memory. And so, yeah, there are a lot of things where, you know, yes, it ties you to your desk. And yes, that's a pain in the ass. But
you get some benefits from that.
You get some benefits. So there's still a trade-off there. So it's not a slam dunk that always the best.
I'm using this desktop with a widescreen 21-inch screen to record the show. And right. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but if a laptop had a screen this big, it would be, you know, annoying.
Hard to carry. Yes. I mean, like, you know, honestly, if I did not have a laptop from work, I almost certainly, when it came time to buy my personal machine, would go for a laptop. But because I have a laptop for work, that means the desktop is probably what I would get.
Okay. All right.
Anyway,
so
let's take a break, and then we'll come back. We have one more segment. I'm guessing it'll probably be short, but every time I guess it'll be short, we go over, so who knows. We'll be back after this.
We're very good at that.
Yeah.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and turned it up all the way.
I got a dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620. And in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, the Valley.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah, I was coughing again during the break. Yes, lovely, lovely. Okay, Yvonne, one last segment. Palin, iPhone
sure.
App Store stuff or filibusters?
Let's talk about the idiot.
Okay. Now, she has a book coming out. I have not seen the book yet. I have not read the book yet. To be honest, I probably won't read the book.
I got to be honest. I will probably not read the book either. Okay. But I will criticize it, though.
Of course. So basically, the stuff that's been coming out so far.
Hey, but at least we're honest about the fact that we didn't read the damn thing. Okay?
We haven't read the thing. And, you know, I'll be honest, too. I mean, so a lot of people have been talking about it, and I've sort of skimmed that and only half paid attention. So
right.
A lot of what I'm going to say is going to be bullshit. You know,
but that's right.
It doesn't stop me from talking about it.
It doesn't stop us from talking about it, but at least we're honest about it. There you go.
So anyway, most of the talk about the book so far has been about how a good deal of it is going to be her ripping on the McCain campaign.
Yes.
And the McCain campaign is, of course, coming back out and firing back, you know, the people who were on the McCain campaign, that is.
Yeah, I hope they're still not campaigning, because otherwise that could be not all such a great idea.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, like they were talking about you know, her decision to go on Saturday Night Live. And in the book, apparently, she says that she always thought it was a good idea. And the McCain campaign, on the other hand, is saying, well, you know, actually, you know, she fought the idea kicking and screaming. You know, and I don't know. And so
Well, and then so basically, they can't agree on anything. Period.
You know, and she I don't know. What can you say? I mean, it's not like she's known as a paragon of honesty to begin with. And I hate to reiterate last year's stuff, although it is kind of fun. But I mean, I think the more you hear about this woman, the more she does, the more times she opens her mouth, the more that it all comes down to, you know, McCain really thought this woman could be president? Really? And that single fact, beyond anything else, you know, disqualified him to be president. You know, and the McCain campaign will, you know, at this point, various people in it will say, you know, outright that, yeah, picking her, you know, gave us a momentary boost, but in the end really hurt us.
Yes.
I mean, because, and I don't know what she thinks in terms of what her future is going to be, whether she truly has presidential ambitions or not. Honestly, I think probably not. And a number of people have sort of analyzed, like, one of the things she's been doing, she's been going around giving speeches and, you know, getting paid nicely for those speeches.
Yeah, and I heard one of them. She sounded like a complete moron at the speech.
Well, I mean, one of the things is that there are a lot of restrictions on, you know, they're not supposed to be recorded. Anything you've heard has been a leak by somebody right. doing an unauthorized recording. They're not supposed to be recorded. They're supposed to be off the record. People aren't supposed to be quoting her, blah, blah, blah. Which, by the way, this is not how someone running for office acts. Someone running for office wants their stuff out in front of as many people as possible
right.
to get themselves visible.
Right.
This is, however, how someone asks if they have the same speech and they want to give it over and over and over again for money.
Right.
Yeah. Good old Levi Johnson, you know, who was the father of her daughter's baby, you know, and is doing his own 15 minutes of fame kind of stuff, is busy talking about how, yeah, she's all about the money. You know, even when she was governor, she was all about the money. It was, you know, and, you know, she spent a lot of time talking about the things they could do to translate this into money. And, you know, I don't know. I think to some degree it's a dead issue until or unless she actually decides to go running for president in 2012 or something. You know, I really don't think she's going to. You know, even in the preliminary poll, Republican polls, you know, people like Huckabee are beating her. I mean, it's not like, you know, she gets a lot of name recognition and a lot of people paying attention to her. Whereas, you know, how much have you honestly heard about Huckabee recently? But still, she even in Republican circles, she's not necessarily. Yeah, it's not like people are jumping up and down saying we must have Palin, you know.
No, but I haven't. Yeah.
Although, at the same time, I really, really wish that she did run because, you know, watching the Republicans in 2011 and 2012 is going to be really entertaining anyway. If you throw her into the mix, it's just going to be a wonderful show.
It'll be a spectacle, I'll tell you what. You know, it'll be like a steel cage match with all these morons bouncing around, I'll tell you this.
So, anyway, I have nothing else to say. Do you have anything else?
No, I think we're toast.
So then let's wrap it up, because also I realized, like, after we started this segment, that we'd actually already done 5 segments, and this was number 6, and I couldn't count. So,
okay, all right, well, you know, that shows our qualifications for president, too.
Yeah, okay. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, I don't know.
Okay.
Because yeah, I'm looking at this screen saying, oh, okay, we got one more. We got one. Oh, wait, there's
no, we don't.
Six. Anyway, anyway, we're done. Thank you for joining us for Curmudgeon's Corner yet again. Tell all your friends that you like it. We got one good comment on the blog, by the way, from somebody apparently listening to the show for the first time who liked it and said this was great and actually Twittered about it, too. So thank you, John, for that.
Woohoo!
For anybody else, tell all your friends, have them join. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, please email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com or comment on the blog when I post the show. And we'd love to hear from you, and we'll respond to your comments here. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're done.
All right. Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.